Welcome to the Cartoon Brew podcast. I'm Cole Delaney. Let's see what's been happening in the world of animation last month. When you think of Aardman animation, you might think of plasticine and comedy, and you may not immediately think of musicals and felt. But that's exactly what the plan is for their next short. As the next generation of storytellers comes through their gates, Aardman's so-called house style of wide grins and browless foreheads that had seemingly dominated their most popular work is fading away. This holiday season, they're releasing Robin Robin, produced by Aardman and Netflix, directed by Mikey Pleece and Dan Ojari.
The humans take the spikiest tree in the woods, put a shiny magic star on top, make a wish, and in the morning, they get anything they want.
I wish I was a mouse.
Sorry, what?
Alex has a really interesting interview with them on the website, but some points really struck out to me, and I'd like to settle on them just for a moment. It's funny to think that we can spot an Aardman project a mile away due to this so-called house style. But what is so interesting is the reticence in the creators to talk about it. Peter Lord once said that he doesn't believe they have a house style per se, that they can work in any style, really. But the popularity of Nick Parks, Wallace and Gromit, and Creature Comforts catapulted Aardman to the global stage. And that's part of the reason why his style has become synonymous with the studio, especially after the popularity of Chicken Run and Flushed Away. But you can see that visual design become challenged and morph, pun intended, with films like Arthur Christmas and the Pirates movie. When it comes to advertising and a lot of the shorts or series they produced, the real style of Aardman becomes evident in their mastery of stop motion. I think this is where Robin Robin has found a really great home. I know Mikey Pleece and Dan Ojari's body of work for stop motion is outstanding, especially with shorts like Goodness, Newness, Oldness, Badness and Marilyn Miller. Seeing them tackle a more family-friendly narrative is exciting. I love in the interview how they talk about needle felt and how it absorbs light really nicely, quite differently than plasticine. The fringed edges add a sort of luminosity and create a beautiful rim light. I love that they included the handmade Christmas feel of felt as part of the consideration in working with the material. Of course, working with needle felt adds a lot of challenges too, especially as you manipulate the fabric from shot to shot, which is just the nature of stop motion. Naturally, because of all the minute hairs, that will add a lot of boil. And Ojari explains that they really considered how much they wanted to control that, specifically for intimate scenes, where it kind of steals the show if you let it go wild. I'm not sure how personal the story of Robin Robin is to the creators, but you can tell the level of detail and care they're crafting in the short. It just oozes off the page. And speaking of personal stories, I'm actually joined by Joe Matteo, director of the short film Blush, which is Skydance's first animated short. Joe, it's lovely to have you here. Thank you so much for coming.
Hey, Cole.
You directed Blush. Tell me, how did that happen? What was the start of that?
Yeah, so it's my first time directing. And, you know, I didn't see myself like directing something, you know, it's not... But I feel like there's a message that I wanted to share with people that I, you know, I just went through from losing my wife. Like 4 years ago, I lost Marianne from breast cancer. Mm-hmm. 4.5 years ago, to be exact. Yeah.
Well, I'm very sorry for your loss. That's never easy.
Thank you, Cole. And, you know, it was inspired by that moment. You know, that night when I lost Marianne, I struggled to breathe and I didn't know what was happening to me. And, you know, it was panic attack. That was my first time experiencing it.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, I was surrounded by my two daughters, Joey Ann and Nina. And then after that, I struggled to go back to work. You know, I thought work can be a therapy for me and, you know, it can help me with what I was going through, but no, I struggled with it. And then I find myself looking back at that moment and I realize how, you know, Marianne was my heir and my daughters Joanne and Mina saved me, you know, Cole. It just inspired me to share with people that losing a loved one can be overcome by surrounding yourself with people you love.
Yeah.
In a time where I think hope and healing is needed the most, you know, and.
I think, and I can kind of relate to you here in a sense. I think once you've kind of gone through a situation where you lose someone incredibly close to you, it definitely rejigs your perspective quite a bit, you know?
Yeah.
For me in that moment, like I really realized that how special life was and, you know, the most important things to me in the world mm-hmm. were so clear in that moment. They were totally revealed,
yep.
you know? And obviously there's a lot of vulnerability in being able to open up something like that, especially to, let's say, a board of people who you're basically pitching your heart to.
Oh, yeah.
How did you find that?
It was tricky at first, you know, again, it being so personal, you know, so a safe space is one of the key. It's really important for me to feel safe in sharing the story. And I'm fortunate for Skydance for providing that space, not just that, it's not just the literal place, right? But the people, you know, it's the people that I work with, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked on other movies before and the key is to be comfortable with the other artists. For me, it actually was easier because it made it easier that I kind of knew the people that I was sharing the stories with. It was a close friend of mine, you know, Orion Redson, Nathan Greno, and Anna Lencioni, who's one of the storyboard artists too, became kind of like a close friend. And before I pitched this story, and of course, John Lasseter, you know, it was a small group of people that I initially shared it with. And of course, our editor, Tim Mertens, was part of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of those people I worked with at Disney. So it made it easier. But, you know, after that, after putting together the story reel, we then had to share it with the rest of the studio, right?
Yeah.
So that's where it, you know, it becomes kind of like, oh,
yeah.
What am I doing kind of thing?
Wear sunglasses in the back. Yeah,
I know. Exactly. actually, my editor forced me to sit in the middle of the room. It's like, what? we had our first screening at the studio and, you know, at the end of it, I already, you know, I was ready with my note of like, you know, people that I needed to thank for making it happen.
Kind of,
you know, all that stuff. But towards the end, I was so overwhelmed. And because of the warm response from everyone at Skydance, like everyone got up and, you know, and clapped. And I was just, I couldn't feel my legs, Cole. I was you know, I was just there and I was like really overwhelmed with like emotion and crying because I just shared this very personal story and this is the warm response that I got, you know. It was very catharsis, you know.
I super cathartic. Yeah, it's better than everyone getting up and walking out. Just be like, uh oh.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Did something wrong here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about all those, how emotional that moment must be. But even before that, there are so many emotions mixed up in a story like this. Obviously, you've got the whole lifetime with your wife, you know, that you're trying to squeeze into, what, 7 or 8 minutes?
Yep.
How do you find out what's important to tell that story with continuity and consistency, that it's not just the greatest hits of your love life? How do you find that thread?
I just started from the very beginning.
Oh.
You know, even before we, you know, before we met, I met Marianne at our first week, you know, in college. I already knew that I liked drawing, right? Like that's, you know, what I'm passionate about. But I didn't know what to do with it, you know, until in college when I met Marianne. We kind of shared the same passion and she was super into animations. And I want to share this story real quick of how we met. Like I heard this first week, right? I heard this laughter kind of like filling up the room and it's coming from across the room, our classroom.
Yeah.
And I walked over there and she's like this, one of this, maybe the smallest person in the room, but she's like the loudest, you know? And then I introduced myself and, you know, the moment she turned around, she blushed.
Oh, wow.
And she like changed color. Like she turned red, like, you know, I was a bit concerned. I remember thinking, you know, like, is she okay? But, you know, I was so charmed by it, you know, like for me, it was like love at first sight. But for her, I think it didn't mean anything. I soon found out that her nickname in high school was Ketchup, you know, so she's known to transform into that, you know, like she just, it doesn't take a lot to make her blush. So, and that's also just the reason why it's titled Blush. And then, you know, what's amazing about telling this story too, Cole, is that, you know, I was kind of like stuck for a moment where going through the battle, you know, those times, and I was stuck and almost like, you know, I struggled to get out of it, but thinking about this story helped me look back into, you know, the gifts of, you know, spending time with Marianne, you know, I was the one who taught her how to ride a bike, and that moment of them like throwing the ball at each other, that's like, it's like it's on the grass where I taught her how to ride the bike. So that shot, it made me think of that moment, even though it's not exact, because I didn't want to add like a prop
of a bike,
and the ball is already there, so that shot right there, it signifies, you know, it symbolizes one, you know, one of our dates where I taught her how to ride a bike, and it was very special. And the whole short is basically that whole segment of them dating is just very special moments of symbolizing those specific moments, you know.
The fun and the sweetness of it all, you know, as well. Yep. It's so nice because you would look back at something like that with rose-tinted glasses.
Exactly.
Is that part of the reason why you made her pink, or what was the kind of decision in that? You can say no.
No. Pink is just, you know, blush and just... And the breast cancer pink ribbon was kind of like, you know...
very important.
Her hair, like the ribbon hair that she has, that wasn't actually there when I first thinking about the design of the alien.
Yeah.
And it was John who kind of like pushed for, why can't it be like a ribbon quality hair, you know, kind of like pink ribbon. So, and I was like, oh yeah, of course, why not, you know? And it just made her so special.
Yeah. And it goes beyond.
Yep.
Like she suddenly isn't just your wife, you know, she is a symbol for everyone else who's kind of either struggled through this or have known people that have as well.
I'm glad that you said that, Cole, because, you know, I want this story to be universal. This is really like a universal message of love and hope and healing, you know. Yeah, and that's also the reason why there are no dialogue.
I was about to ask, but you answered my question before I got to it.
I'm sorry, Cole. I'm just so excited.
I think you're right in that. Obviously, this is something that unfortunately will happen to everyone at some stage, unless they're the first one to go. Not this very specific thing, but you know, losing someone close to you is just part of the natural experience of things, unless of course they're the first to go. Ultimately, something like Blush, even if people don't understand it, they think it's a nice film, I think those who have gone through a similar experience find it very beautiful and close, especially the moments where she's starting to fade and you have the blanket on the hill and stuff like that. Like, it really calls back to that want to still live, but the vulnerability and the kind of fragility that exists still in that life.
Yeah. One thing that I want to share with you, Cole, is that, you know, that movement of the particles of her kind of like disappearing, right? Like it has this spiral movement that's kind of like all over the film. It's kind of like, you know, our art director kind of came up with that spiral motif, you know? And what I love about that spiral symbolizes life, you know, it means life. And you know, those particles, even though Marianne, it kind of becomes like sweet irony of like, you know, in her passing, it becomes a celebration of his of her life.
That's beautiful. Yeah. You said your production designer, she was in France for most of the production, wasn't she?
Yeah. Yeah. Noelle Thoreau. We started here in LA and she moved to France in the middle of our production. So
yeah, not to complicate things.
Yeah, I know. you know, we kind of got used to it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something intimate too with like working with people across the country, with artists across the country. Because our, you know, most of our crew is over at Madrid.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Seeing them through like Zoom, you know, we're seeing the background, which is their house, their private space, you know, it makes it kind of intimate, you know?
Yeah. In a way. Yeah. A window into their soul.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
you know, usually with shorts like this, generally as when they started, it's more of a side project.
Yeah.
And like it's a group, it's a much smaller group of people that work on it, as opposed to the end when it's like scaled up full production. Mm-hmm. How did you find that kind of transition across, especially if most of the people who worked on it are in Spain?
For us, it kind of worked out perfectly, I think. You know, we started with like small group of people here in LA. I had my production designer and head of creative production, which is Esther Esbarnolo. So it was just kind of like the three of us. And of course, my producer, Heather Fenyanu. So we started with that small group. And going into production, I thought I'd... I knew everything, that I was ready, right? But it was
the folly.
It was a very humbling experience jumping into it.
Yeah.
You know, and fortunately for me, I have those people that I just mentioned, because they really helped me find my way through all of it. And then we started from a small group, and then and everyone too is like, it's kind of like their side project, right? Even me, I was I was on a feature film and boarding on that, and it's kind of everyone's second job, right? And then there's something cool about, there's not a lot of pressure in that beginning stage, and you can just create whatever you want, you know, and really shape it. And then we started getting bigger when we issued it to layout, and it just kind of grew from there. And having those people help me with that, with all that transition, and just providing me with the knowledge to kind of like go about it.
You said you were working from home, obviously, for this whole time as well.
Yeah.
So you must have had your daughters there with you for most of this production.
they're very much a part of like making this film. They were like my my in-house tech support, you know. No, it's amazing. You know, you become like an old man when you like look at the young ones to kind of like help you with technical stuff. They're amazing and very much part of it. Like I would show them stuff and I love just seeing them get excited about the progression and how their characters are like developing and,
oh my God.
In each stage. And during the tough time too, right? It really helped to have something like this. You know, it provided a sense of, for me, a sense of normalcy, and for them to kind of like, you know, have something to be excited about, you know.
How did they find it then? I don't want to get too personal. You can totally not answer this question. But obviously after losing a mother and then to make something like this, was it cathartic for them as well? Or... you know, was it tough?
Yeah.
Or both?
You know, those two were my support. They, you know, I think they did so much more for me than I did for them, you know, during that loss. And, I remember pitching it to both of them, and they were very excited about it. You know, I love when my daughter Joanne would share that story of me pitching it for the first time, just having this one drawing of the astronaut on top of a mini planet throwing a rock, you know.
So was that your gag was the rock that comes back around the planet, was it?
Yeah. I wanted it to be charming. I just wanted to, you know, I know how sad the story could be, but I want to focus on on the charm of, you know, I want to make sure that when we create this world, that it's a place that you want to visit.
And it's fun as well.
Yeah.
There's a reason why the symbol for theater is a laughing face and a sad face, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point.
It's because they're the two emotions that pull through a story.
I love that, Cole. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
It's something I think about a lot. But I'm glad, because obviously something like this, you could, like you said, approach it with a very heavy hand, as is natural, but that's just not the true way.
That's the roller coaster of life, right?
Yeah, I really like that as well. Now tell me, you got picked up then by Apple TV.
Yeah.
So now everyone can look at it. What? Is there something you'd like to say to everyone before they watch it, or now that they have watched it?
Oh, for a first directorial job to be seen all over the world. And really, thanks to Apple, you know, it's just, I'm so grateful. And I hope that people, you know, get that message, the message of healing and hope, and how you, it's important to surround yourself with people you love. And I hope it resonates. And I'm very proud of Blush, of the short and how it came out, but I'm equally proud of how we made it, you know? And I think my connection that I have with the crew, of them taking ownership and, you know, really connecting to it on a personal level, you know, and it's hard not to get to, you know, and I feel like, you know, some of our crews, you know, I have like this friendship that I created, you know. The message is like, for the short, it's like to surround yourself with people you love, and like working with the crew, this circle of people that surrounds me got bigger because I learned to love them so much, you know? So I talked about like my gift of being able to draw since I was young. Right. And then Marianne, not until I met Marianne where I decided what I wanted to do with it, you know, get into like animation and stuff. You know, that plant, that the astronaut plants, you know, the dome plant, the mini plant, it kind of symbolizes that, the gift that I was given.
Wow.
And it took Marianne to kind of like make that plant into like a fruit bearing tree.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautiful.
And now that she's gone, it's just like, you know, it's up to me.
That's a beautiful way of looking at it, really, in a true animator metaphorical sense.
Because if you look at Blush, it's a very simple love story, right? Of life,
of course.
And but those symbols are there for people to kind of like find for themselves, you know. And
and tell their own stories through it.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's funny that it's such an honor to be able to present someone's life like that afterwards. Because let's say if you're at a funeral or something, you have to read a eulogy. It's so, like, I know for me, it's so hard to compress someone's effect on your life into simple words or simple pictures or anything like that. But it happened to me when my brother passed away. He was very young. He was only 18. And after that, I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to tell everyone about his life, you know, and I'm going to be very fervent, and I'm going to be very almost militaristic in talking about it, because I want to share the effect that someone had. But I very soon found out that people aren't ready to hear it. There's a sympathy that is attached to someone and they mean the best. They just don't know how to react.
Yeah.
So I'd prefer not to be in that situation. But with something like this, I mean, it almost guarantees empathy in some way, because you're connecting beyond just the personal story. There's like you said, there's a universal truth in there. And I think that's so beautiful.
Whew, thank you for sharing that, Cole.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, that was no beautiful. Worries.
You know, Joe, one thing I'll say, regardless of whatever happens with your short, obviously it's great that it's on a huge platform that's easily accessible for so many people to watch. And that's really wonderful, because like you said, a lot of time, first time short directors, it usually has to do these festival rounds and it's very hard for people to access. So it's great that it's there. But I think I truly do believe that this will definitely help some people through their own stuff. And that just comes naturally with sharing a story honestly, which I feel that you've done here. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much, Paul. That's that's the goal, and whatever we can do to kind of like help push for that, and not just through this film, right? Like, you know, just in general, you know.
But I'll let you go, Joe. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is awesome. Thank you so much.
If you would like to watch Blush, it's available worldwide on Apple TV right now. You know, when you think of how a deeply personal story can challenge you to want to create a masterwork, the inverse can be said of how wanting to create a masterwork then becomes a personal story. I mean, think of Richard Williams and The Thief and the Cobbler, which highlights the adage of you only truly finish a piece of work when they take it away from you. Now, obviously, in Williams' case, it was truly ripped away after 30 years of work, and to his vision, it remains incomplete. But that's not the longest production of an animated feature. That wild honor goes to Yuri Norstein and The Overcoat, which began production in 1981 and is still ongoing. You know, Norstein is known as the Golden Snail, and his progress is referred to as glacial at best. There was an article this month in Cartoon Brew which highlighted a video that Atrocity Guide had made on YouTube. It's a 45-minute video essay about his life's work, and it is mesmerizing to watch. It certainly doesn't feel like 45 minutes. What I loved about the video is its weave of how animation has fundamentally affected their life. And I say they because it also highlights the beautiful work of his wife, Francesca Yabusova, and her equal contribution to Norstein's work. For anyone who knows Norstein, it's not a secret that he works in cutout animation. He actually branded it the Soviet technique. And just an aside, often with cutout animation, the limbs and parts that need to move are rotated on a hinge, which often lead to the kind of limbs moving in a very flat plane. It looks unnatural almost. Now, this is a trend I see a lot of in modern animation through shows that are primarily made through rigged 2D puppets in programs like Harmony or Flash. There's nothing wrong with it, I understand budgetary constraints. But for me, if I put a finger over the character's head, I want to see if I can work out their emotions through their body language. And it doesn't always come through on hinged movement. Norstein fundamentally chose not to follow that exact process and would draw in perspective and then apply it across the puppet, allowing secondary motion and other things to creep in. And you can really see the beauty in his work, especially in some of his most widely known shorts, The Hedgehog in the Fog and Tale of Tales. Soviet animation is a goldmine of creative choices and challenging voices. But Norstein and Yabusova's work is masterful, especially their technical hold over cinematography and the ability to weave in metaphor. Norstein always wants his next work to be better than the last. And that's just part of the reason why The Overcoat is still in production. Another part is that he didn't want to work from a script, but rather feel it out as they made it. I mean, of course, this makes a pipeline totally impossible because you can't plan anything. You're just taking the story step at a time. And I know that certain directors work in a very similar method, like Hayao Miyazaki, but once he's built the storyboard, that's it. With Norstein's way of working, you can't even make out a budget because you don't know how long a scene is going to be. It's been 40 years and they've only made 25 minutes of animation so far. And because they need to fund their feature, they occasionally take advertising or compilation work, which causes them to focus solely on that side job and lose time on The Overcoat. Now, what I really like about Atrocity Guide's video is when they start to suggest in so many words that Norstein needs to endure uncomfortable conditions in order for the purity of that feeling in the original text to shine through his work. He also flat out refuses any assistance from both public and private bodies to fund the feature. Atrocity Guide does a really great job following the weave of Norstein's career, along with the chains that come with Soviet censorship, and then the fall and reality following its collapse. When I think of that level of obsession and complete focus on work, I'm becoming more aware of how dangerous that can be on your mental health. And while the work can be celebrated, that doesn't mean it left its creator unscathed. Just because their struggle may appear in the work doesn't mean that it's not kicking around in their heads still and all the anxiety that came through the production. And that's where I think Charlie Gavin has been great at calcifying his experiences working in the industry and his mental health through webcomics. Being able to pare down an experience to something that resonates deeply with someone else is a wonderful gift. A gift any storytelling industry has been built from. Charlie has a great interview actually on the website about his webcomics, but also his overall feeling toward the industry and how he feels it affects employees' mental health. With streaming services becoming the new normal, their budgets and deadlines are becoming the new normal too, which can lead to very dangerous crunches. Now, personally, I'm a big advocate of philosophies like Vineet Nayar's employees first, customers second, or Simon Sinek's leaders eat last. When it comes to the structure of a business where the collective responsibility of those in charge is to take care of those in their charge. Encouraging people to talk about their experiences is always the first step to fixing any issues, and as well shows the solidarity in the fact that you are not alone when it comes to this feeling. And that's why there's so many great moments in the interview with Charlie, you know, that just speak to part of who you are and heighten the awareness of something that maybe you didn't pick up on before. Something like he says that he feels less productive when he's on display, which is how it can feel when you work in the office. And I think that's so strong and powerful. It's such a simple way to describe that feeling. It's very wise and pulls out a root cause, which could be the result of anxiety coming from not feeling totally trusted in the work that you've done, or just being under pressure from someone else who's under pressure. His advocacy for making sure we are taking responsibility in maintaining mental health as a priority is admirable. And I'm really glad it's coming forward as part of a working life discussion. And that's partly due to people resonating with comics like Charlie's. And if you want to read more about that or anything else I've mentioned, check out cartonbrew.com for these few stories and so much more. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening.